We are on a misty Saturday morning in July of 1915, and it's about 7 in the morning, and this steamship, large steamship that is as large as a football field, is loading up with 2,500 people. Most of them are factory workers, poor, a lot of women and children. The ship goes into a half an hour sort of sequence of topsy-turvy behavior in which it spins, it begins to turn toward the dock, turns away from the dock, it turns back toward the dock, and eventually it spins completely over. It lands on its side. It's at the Chicago River. It's immediately fills with water, and 844 people drowned within minutes.
What caused this shifting of the ship?
What exactly happened, we haven't known. We haven't known in the past 100 years since the tragedy what caused it. And what I found in digging through National Archives records is that there was actually a plausible explanation. What we can see from the evidence that prosecutors gathered was that there were cruel business owners who ran the ship, who knew the ship had stability problems. They began discussing specific repairs to fix water pipe stabilizing machinery deep in the hull of the ship, and then they neglected to follow through. Cutting corners, they decided to wait until the 1915 sailing season was over, and that cost the Eastland victims their lives. And I think that they neglected the needed repairs is not an author's speculation or theory. This is the explanation that vividly emerges from the evidence that was painstakingly gathered by the police and prosecutors in the summer of 1915. I think that no one was found criminally responsible for the deaths of 844 people, many women and children, as I mentioned, is one of the great injustices of the 20th century.
For a lot of people, it might be hard to imagine that something along the Chicago River there could lead to such great loss of life. It doesn't seem like it's that far away from land or maybe the dock in this situation. You know, why weren't people able to get back to the surface and possibly be rescued?
Yeah, the scene was incredibly chaotic. You have to imagine the Chicago River at the point at which the Eastland sank, it was just about 19 feet from its dock. So people literally could almost reach across and they could almost leap to the ship or leap to the dock. The problem was that the way the ship sank and the way the ship was designed, there was really only one main stairwell out from the middle decks out to the top. That stairwell quickly became stampeded by all the people trying to get out and clogged, and essentially everyone then was blocked from being able to exit the ship. The other thing is, it's a horrible scene to think about. This is a ship that suddenly turns sideways. So think if you're in a house and it's sideways. Think about a stairwell that normally would go up. It's now going sideways. And if you try to step on a stair tread, you're simply going to slide down. On top of that, you're in a ship that has corridors. You're trying to wind your way out. It's as if you're in a maze that's turned sideways. So nothing is working for a smooth exit. Okay, say you manage to get out and you're up at the top of the water. People are clawing and screaming and flailing in the water. And there are instances we know of men who didn't know how to swim, grabbing hold of young women and drowning them. I mean, it was a tremendously chaotic scene. On top of that, there was a lot of debris that was thrown. This is the place this happened on the Chicago River was in a warehouse district, largely a fruit production area and fruit retailing area. So there were a lot of crates that were being thrown in, crates for fruit. You know, life preservers, all kinds of debris is flying down. Some of it hit people in the head and knocked them unconscious. And, you know, and on top of numerous other complications, the women were in very typical apparel for a nice day out in the summer picnic, which would have been ankle-length dresses and skirts and shirt waist and so forth. So they're not exactly in the best apparel suddenly to be dumped in a river and trying to swim. So for all these reasons, the tremendous loss of life.
We're talking with Michael McCarthy. He's the author of Ashes Underwater. It focuses on the Eastland disaster that occurred 100 years ago this week. And Mr. McCarthy, let me also ask you, why as a society is this so forgotten? I mean, this is a tremendous loss of life. It happened right here in Illinois. I bet most people don't even remember it.
You know, I'm ashamed to say I didn't know about it. If you think about it, I lived and worked. I grew up in St. Louis, lived and worked in Chicago for about 7 or 8 years with the Wall Street Journal before I'd ever heard about it. And so I was one of the people who was kind of blindsided by it. But you know, it's a very good question. Why have people forgotten? Well, I think there's a couple good reasons. One is that none of the passengers on the ship were affluent or prosperous or celebrities, right? So when we had the Titanic, we had the unsinkable Molly Brown and some other rich aristocrats who died. In the case of the Eastland, it was all factory workers. There was one particular factory in Chicago called Western Electric. They made, if you can remember, what's called the candlestick phone. It's the phone in which it's like tall, looks like a candlestick. You'd remove the receiver and hold it up to your ear. The Western Electric Company was the only producer of phones in the United States. It was right there in Chicago, and they were having a company picnic. So most of the employees were on the Eastland at the time it sank. So these were not well-known people. These were not people who write memoirs or would be normally written up in the newspapers if they died. Okay, aside from that, immediately after this happens, the accident happens in July of 1915. There's a trial in 1916 to try and bring those responsible to justice. By 1917, the United States is in World War I, and that really changed a lot. And I think that the Eastland story got buried in the absolute world-changing events of World War I. And I think that's a problem. And finally, I think one of the reasons it's been forgotten is because, like I said, until I did my research and wrote my book, we haven't really had anyone to blame. There was no one really guilty. It just seemed like the boat tipped over, and no one knew why. And I think that probably kept it from being a legacy of history that we would know about, something that we would know, like the Lusitania or the Titanic.
Well, mentioning the legacy of the Eastland, I was surprised to learn that the ship itself continued on sort of in a second life, and it involved the military.
It did. Well, after the sinking, it took them a month before they actually could pump it out, raise it back up, and figure out what to do with it. At this point, the military, the Navy, took over the ship. They cut a couple decks off of it because they decided they were going to use it as a training vessel for military maneuvers, for naval maneuvers, and they didn't need all the cabin space that you would use for a cruise ship for passengers. They also made key changes to the stability system that the Eastland owners had contemplated doing, but failed to do. So once the mechanical flaws, once the fatal mechanical flaws were repaired, the ship was perfectly fine. But that, unfortunately for all the victims of the Eastland, that hadn't been done until the Navy had taken the ship over.
As we approach the 100th anniversary of this awful event, what can society learn from something that happened so long ago?
It's a great question, and I think it's always important to expose how calamity can result when corporations put profit in front of people's safety. We're seeing this right now in the newspapers. The Japanese company that has the airbags in autos that have led to fatalities, and Congress is after them. We have the auto industry, which has had congressional hearings and problems of their own with mechanical flaws that have led to people's death. So anytime we have a story that shows how this can happen, the efforts to bring people to justice, and how those efforts can be thwarted, I think there's some good lessons for us. And particularly, when you think about the transportation industry, which is all I'm talking about now, whether auto or ship, you're moving many hundreds of people. In the case of autos, millions of people. And so when something's wrong, those numbers can quickly mushroom, very quickly mushroom. And for Illinois or for Chicago, just even to talk about a little local relevance, there are thousands of descendants in Chicago and elsewhere, relatives of Eastland victims, who really deserve to know the full story of how and why their family members perished horribly. There were 22 whole families who died on the Eastland. As I mentioned, there were this is a company picnic, so maybe the father worked in a cable department. He would bring his wife. They'd bring their children. Often there was a grandmother living in the house. That whole family went on the Eastland. There were many of those, and 22 entire families died on a single day within minutes there on the Chicago River. And given that, when I think about that, I realize that this historic tragedy changed the architecture of family trees forever.